Then I'm going to.
Yes, I'm still not.
Good afternoon, everyone. I will convene the meeting of the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is March 3rd, 2015. And we are going to be taking public testimony today on Senate Bill 5539, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Steister, where are we at?
Well, as you recall, Mr. Co-Chair, the agency finished their slide deck yesterday. However, they have come back today with additional information for everyone's edification with regard to the extended outreach grant that was administered during the 13-15 biennium. On OLIS, for your edification, is the grant manual, which basically has the criteria for what would be considered for a successful grant application for those funds, as well as more information on the grant recipients and what the specific projects were that were funded. So if there are specific questions with regard to that, I know that Mr. Smith is prepared to walk through that pretty quickly. And I know that we also have not yet heard from the Department of Administrative Services Chief Financial Office yet.
They look like they're conferring over there. I'd invite Mr. Smith and Ms. Brickman up to the table. And
good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And as Michelle detailed, we submitted additional information on the Veterans Extended Outreach Grant Program. In our original slide deck that we had submitted, had the raw dollars that went out to the 26 or to the counties. And then included in the submissions this morning into OLIS, a more detailed description county by county of what they invested in terms of those staff resources, IT resources, outreach resources, and marketing resources. Additionally, we included the grant manual that basically took the information in the budget note and made it into a grant manual, both for the application, detailed the outcomes in terms of driving those power of attorneys, and then also what was the scoring criteria. And it also includes the membership, I believe, in there for the decision committee that was both state and county and urban and rural. Also wanted to touch, we're happy to take any questions on the Veterans Extended Outreach Grant Program. If none, just a few other follow-ups. Senator Hansel had some questions on loan program eligibility in terms of the Oregon National Guard. They would be eligible for the program, but always hinges off of their time in active duty service. So there is that criteria, extra criteria. Another question was raised in terms of whether spouses were eligible to live at the veterans home. We answered, of course, they are. And then there was a question in those two-person rooms at the Dalles. They could be co-located in the same room, but the spouses of the veterans would also have to have a need for skilled nursing, just like their veteran would for eligibility. Happy to take any questions on our policy option packages or review some of the substantive legislation that's before some of the policy committees.
Senator Johnson.
I've got one on the Veterans Enhanced Outreach, and that is, to what degree does the mothership, your agency, give guidance to local groups that are doing some of the stand-downs? Some of those are brilliantly done with a wide array of offerings. They've got congressional staff there. They've got federal offices like the IRS and Social Security. Others, not so much. And do you give them any guidance, or is there a template for setting those things up for success, or do you pretty much just let them cruise off and do their own?
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, we have seen great success both in the metro counties, Multnomah hosting a great stand down for homeless veterans and other veterans looking for benefits. Recently, Lincoln County stood up their first annual homeless count, tied to that homeless count, but also a stand down model. As we bring greater clarity to that statewide veteran service mission and that county VSO mission, I think it's an area for us to grow into. We've often been a partner of those events, but we haven't shared those best practices across county by county. And one of the reclasses, we do out of our Salem claims office, We do very local work for Marion and Polk County, with some of the reclasses proposed in POP 101, beginning to pull that work away from the boots on the ground into a higher level to serve some of those underserved populations, whether women veterans, whether homeless veterans, incarcerated veterans come to mind. So those positions will be program analysts. So they'll have that VSO background, be able to bring and share those best practices, more templates about how to make these events come together in terms of the diverse partners.
And in reviewing this list, there are, follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
There are a lot of them that have publications. Do you give local offices any guidance on branding or theme, or are they just off on their own on what the material should ultimately look like?
So, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, we've brought more structure in terms of, even at our own department, having a range of marketing materials across all these different veterans benefits and targeting different veterans groups. We've since consolidated that into a coordinated veterans benefit magazine, a 40-page benefit magazine, both detailing all of the state benefits, local partners, as well as the federal VA benefits. So all of those resources are available, whether a community college, a prison, a county VSO network. But we did not bring an overarching marketing message when they were doing materials out additionally through this grant. We didn't. It was more of a tight loose in terms of driving those power of attorneys, but leaving a little more flexibility for the county VSOs to determine if it was a billboard in Umatilla that worked, vice postcards more in the metro area.
One more follow-up. Or like a bus route that's out in nowhere that nobody sees. I'm just trying to get a gauge of, in talking about your recurring theme of return on investment, this was probably too fast to check the efficacy of some of the delivery devices. You'd have to rely on the locals. But I'm glad to hear you talking about the fact that you're giving a little more standardization guidance on some of this
and
stuff.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, I think we'll be able to bring a little, if it continues in the form of a grant program, quite impressive in terms of the manual that comes together just for passing through the $1 million, bringing more rigor to it if it stays as a grant program. And then I think we'll have other testimony from the counties here today, whether it should just be part of the base allocation, where, again, we're building those strings and attachments, but not necessarily through the formalized structure of a grant.
And one last question, Mr.
Please,
Chair,
Senator.
That I'm asking at my peril, because I know that there are county commissioners in the audience, but I'm going to do this anyway. I'm trying to figure out, in almost every application in the Capitol, what are the opportunities to give challenge grants so that the local community has some skin in the game, and it's not just what can the state give us, even for a lofty purpose like veteran outreach. I am instructed by our experience in Vernonia, where we had to rebuild three schools to the tune of $40 million. And had the community not passed a bond at $1.90 a thousand, which was incredibly high for them, nobody else would have invested in us. And as the close came to the day, we raised $40 million. We're still a little tiny bit short, but we're very, very close. My point is that if you put a grant element in, I mean, a challenge element in, and the local communities generally, I think, would be very responsive to veterans, could you, in effect, double the amount of money that is being used in a local community?
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, I think you could. Already quite a bit of significant. The state started their contribution from the state level about 2005, 2007, in terms of that 3.5 that we passed down to the county. Going back to the last days of World War II, this was always a county VSO-funded program. In a rural county, it's about, the state now is about 75% of the county budget.
I can see the commissioner beginning to look horrified. I'm not talking about matching the county veteran service officer. I'm talking about matching these, the 26 county grants that you gave out of the Bob Jensen $1 million.
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, we could certainly look at making it a challenge component to get more skin in the game. And I think we'll hear from the counties that they do have significant resources already in the game, and would likely, many are stepping up additionally, and we may see them do more so with the challenge grant
model. I'll await the public testimony. Thank you.
Other questions for Director Smith?
No.
And co-chairs, members of the committee, just to briefly go through some of the major legislation that's coming before some of the policy committees. So for the four agency bills that we submitted, none have major fiscals. One simply repeals outdated statutes. One is looking at making sure that in addition to the conservatorship fiduciary, that we can be a representative payee and pay veterans bills out of their source of income, whether Social Security or their federal VA benefits when they're unable to manage their finances. Senate Bill 252 looks to exclude us from the loan program or our loan program from mediation, already have broad flexibility to work with veterans when they are at risk of foreclosure or delinquent, and simply adds costs on top of it right now. And the last one that I would highlight for our bills, as we collect all of this information and try to do more outreach, both from the county and state level, all of that veterans information right now becomes a public record and is accessible, whether by elected leaders or marketers or anyone else that wants to tap into that list. And we'd like to make that veterans information that comes to us private, separate and distinct from any of the healthcare information that obviously has HIPAA protection. But we would like all of their information to be kept private. A few other bills that speak to the outreach metrics. House Bill 2230, Representative Nathanson helping. We've partnered with DHS and DMV to draw down more information voluntarily when the veteran wants to give it to the department. This would pull in the Oregon Health Authority as well. Again, find out folks that are on state safety net services, largely general funded, and shifting those over to the federal VA opportunities. Also highlight Representative Witt's bill in terms of reviewing medical services for women veterans, one of our fastest growing populations. Not necessarily an expertise at our agency, but one that we may contract out and partner with others to help deliver that report. Co-Chair Gomberg has done a lot of work with his small business background, looking at minority women and emerging small business and public contracting. And this would, House Bill 2691 would be looking at potentially adding in a certification process for disabled veteran-owned businesses without a major fiscal. Representative Evans has an incarcerated veterans outreach program bill. House Bill 2838 that would envision us doing more outreach to the about self-identified 2,000 vets that are incarcerated at state prisons across those 14 institutions. I think I'll leave it at that for now. There is a major veterans preference for public employers. It's confusing for public employers. It's House or Senate Bill 87, confusing for public employers, confusing for veterans, and bringing greater clarity for that defined benefit of veterans preference in public employment. But happy to take any questions.
Any other questions? Seeing none.
And I'll hand over to Ms. Brickman.
Ms. Brickman, welcome.
Thank you. We'll switch here so I can drive, I suppose. So, Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tamara Brickman, and I am with the DAS Chief Financial Office. And I'm here just to provide a really brief overview of the governor's budget for the Department of Veterans Affairs. You've heard most of the information from Director Smith, so I won't go into great detail and just stick at a high-level overview of how the process worked as we put the budget together. So, there were a couple of emerging issues that we were really looking at with respect to the department, and that is, of course, the increase in the number of aging veterans, especially those within the Vietnam era, and then also the fact that there's been an increase in the number of veterans filing claims, yet we're still only reaching about 30% of the veterans that we could. And so those were some of the themes that we were looking at when putting this budget together. And as you know, we have a 10-year plan, outcome plan, trying to drive budgets towards outcomes. And the department's budget fits within two of the outcome areas because of the different programs that they have. One being economy and jobs, which the vision there is that Oregon supports a diverse, dynamic, and sustainable economy for all. And essentially, their veteran services programs and their home loan program fit within that program, primarily because the agency within those programs promotes home ownership through the loan program, and it also assists veterans in accessing their benefits, and that enable them to be productive and afford items in the community. And then they're also part of the Healthy People outcome area with their Veterans Homes program, and the theme there is that Oregonians enjoy good health and the best quality possible quality of life. And of course, the Oregon's the Department of Veterans Affairs has two veterans homes, one in the Dells and a new one that was just stood up in Lebanon this last fall. This next slide,
Ms. Brickman.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, Senator.
Going back to the Healthy People again, if you could just go back one. It strikes me that you're missing something in there. In accessing a plethora of benefits, someone homeless might then find a roof over their heads. Someone with inadequate nutrition might have enough money if their benefits are properly calculated to buy food. What I'm trying to do is to tie that Healthy People initiative not only to the caring for our aging veterans, but also providing the essential needs of daily living to veterans heretofore denied their benefits.
Kutcher Gomberg, Senator Johnson, your point is very well taken. And when we originally kind of mapped, so to speak, these programs, we mapped them by first priority, second priority, and third priority.
Oh, okay.
And so, so the department, while the main priority for the Veteran Services Program and the Oregon Home Loan Program fell within what we believe the economy and jobs vision more so, it secondarily was mapped to healthy, I believe, Healthy People. So there was lots of overlay, but the way the system works and the way that we could enter it into the system in order to have outputs for outcomes, we made them by priority number one first. But I'd be happy if you're interested in getting you the information about how those programs mapped by the three different priority levels.
Oh, your explanation here is completely satisfactory. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So this next slide just gives you a brief expenditure history of the department. Well, that's great, my value down there. So so for the general fund, for whatever reason, the PowerPoint didn't work. In 11-13 was $6.4 million. In 2013-15, the value should be $9.7 million for general fund and $0.4 million for federal funds. And then the general fund on 15-17 should reflect 13.37 or 13.4 million. And primarily what this slide is showing you is, yes, expenditures have increased. And the largest share of expenditures for the agency are within their other fund, non-limited arena. That's the green portion. And that's primarily home loans to veterans and debt service for the bonds that have been outstanding for those home loans. The gray is other funds limited, which is primarily used to pay for agency programs, except for that a large portion of that other fund those other fund limited dollars pay the contract for the veterans home as well. So other funds in 13-15, 30.5 million of that 50.4 was for the contract for the homes in both the Dalles and Lebanon. In the Dalles and Lebanon. And then you can see an increase, a substantial increase in the other funds. And that's, again, because of bringing the Lebanon home fully operational. And then general fund had an increase from 2011-13 to 2013-15, primarily because there was some shifting of putting individuals who are providing direct services to veterans, not just on the for home loan programs, but putting them onto general fund dollars. And then there's some investments within the governor's budget that brings the value up a bit. Plus, there are about 2.6 million of the 13.4 that is debt service for the Lebanon home. So there's 2.6 million general fund debt service. The next slide is just an attempt to show you kind of how the dollars, the agency's dollars, are expended. And you can see that 50% of their dollars are basically what we call pass-through dollars, and they go out the door to individuals, contractors, counties, individuals, and veteran service organizations. 41% of their budget is tied up in debt service. And then they have about 9% for employee costs and services and supplies, which pay for the program programs that the ODBA department run directly themselves, which also includes the Portland Claims Office and then the folks here at the central headquarters. Well, this is fabulous. So hopefully it looks better on your screen. I won't attempt to try and fill in all the values there because I don't know exactly what happened. But this, what I wanted to show you here is this is a history of revenues going back to 2005-07 to kind of show you a history of the revenues and how they're coming in. And if you look at the bottom, it goes bottom up. The bottom blue is general fund. And general fund has remained fairly consistent with a slight increase you can see in 2013-15 and then again in 2015-17. And then the gray portion is what they had sold in bonds during that biennium. And you can see that in 11-13 they sold no bonds. With their primary source of revenue actually being, or the large source of their revenue being bond sales that they make. The dark blue at the top is loan repayments they receive, which they revolve for purposes of making loans. And then they received some federal funds very rarely. In 2009-11 and 2011-13, those federal funds were received for capital construction for the Lebanon Veterans Home. And then the $400,000 that they received this biennium has been used for transportation grants to get veterans to and from appointments. Finally, the governor's office, the governor's budget, made some investments. These are primarily general fund investments. There's a couple other funds. One investment was to continue the training position that was approved by the emergency board in the May, this last May. Also to continue the investment for the Veterans Extended Outreach Grant Program at $1 million. And then modernizing their IT infrastructure, which is general funded, and then there's also a portion that would include a loan program modernization, which would be funded through the loan program proceeds. We provided additional staff to address the increase in loan activity, which is funded through the loan program in other funds, and then provided two new staff to mobilize partnerships across government and nonprofit organizations, primarily to get at trying to find a way where we can leverage getting outreach to more veterans and being able to get more veterans the services that they deserve. And then also the investment, which is other funds, is fully funding the staffing for both the veterans' home facilities in the Dalles and Lebanon. And that primarily means funding the contract that they pay. But we did do classification upwards of a couple of some employees in order to make them supervisors. And then we were asked to compare the governor's budget to the co-chair's frame rate. And the governor's budget provides $13.4 million, which includes 2.6 million of general fund for debt service. And really, there's nothing specifically called out in the co-chair's budget with respect to funding explicitly in the framework. And so that's all I have to say about that. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions for Ms. Brickman? No.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, if I can make one comment off of Co-Chair Johnson's comment about somewhat the limiting factor of just saying our skilled nursing facilities is how we approach that healthy people. Often hugely frustrating, I think, both through the governor's budget process and through BAM and the CFO office and through the Ways and Means, often heavily focused on these core programs, often which are very siloed, and not as much on the outcome, that overarching outcome of healthy people that spans all eras and goes to much broader health and wellness issues than just 300 skilled nursing beds for veterans and their spouses. And it really becomes, that has flavored many of our packages coming forward and how we want to shift our work. Less, you know, we care passionately about bringing the best to bear in terms of those core programs, what are discrete, the home loan program serving 2,000 borrowers, the veterans skilled nursing for 300 odd beds, but how do we bring our leadership, our advocacy, and our strong partnerships to bear to truly begin to move the needle on what are challenging outcomes across very diverse policy areas?
Thank you. Well, again, any last questions for these two? Director Smith, Ms. Brickman, thank you both very much for your detailed presentations over the last 2 days. Ms. Brickman, don't apologize about your PowerPoint. We've seen bigger computer problems.
And great opportunity.
Thank you both. We've got two people signed up, and if you want to come together, that would be just fine. Ms. McKeel and Mr. Holton. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm always happy to rest on Ms. Commissioner McKeel's coattails.
So, co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Diane McKeel, and I'm Multnomah County Commissioner, and I am chair of the Association of Oregon Counties Veterans Services Committee. My co-chair on that committee is Commissioner Rod Runyon from Wasco County, and our vice chair is Commissioner Pat Farr from Lane County. I'm testifying today in support of Senate Bill 5539, and in particular to highlight the positive impact of payments to counties for veteran services and the Veterans Extended Outreach Grant Program. And I know you have my testimony, so I won't read it to you. I just want to highlight a few points out of that testimony. County Veteran Service Officers provide a critical function on behalf of our veterans and their families in communities across the state of Oregon. Many veterans don't understand the benefits they are eligible for, and furthermore, VA applications can be cumbersome and difficult to complete. Our veterans have earned benefits through their service, and our County Veteran Service Officers provide the representation and expertise to help veterans and their families access them. Oregon ranks in the top 10 nationally in the awards for claims that our service officers make on behalf of our veterans, with an average annual award of $16,953 per veteran. In FY13, VA expenditures in the state of Oregon totaled $2.2 billion, and compensation and pension benefits alone was $1.1 billion, which is essentially cash coming into our communities. So along with my written testimony, I've also submitted a VA compensation and pension chart with data from each county going back to 2005. Your investment in ODVA and our County Veteran Service Officers is making a difference. Since 2007, this investment has helped increase our statewide disability compensation benefits by nearly 82%, which amounts to almost $500 million of additional funds coming to Oregon. This is the right thing to do for our servicemen and women, and it is a good investment for our communities. The Veterans Extended Outreach Grant Program has been very successful, and we are connecting more veterans across the state with benefits that they have earned through their service. In Multnomah County, our Veterans Service Office has expanded its geographic reach to connect with more veterans in a variety of locations around the county, raised awareness about resources through a diverse advertising campaign, and conducted educational workshops for families and service providers. It's been a successful program, and our experience in Multnomah County has been shared by my fellow AOC Veterans Committee members representing rural and urban counties throughout the state. We have developed a strong partnership with ODVA and through the AOC Veterans Committee, and I believe the relationship between counties and ODVA enables us to best serve our veterans. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Ms. McKeel. Any questions? Yes, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Commissioner. A question for you that I would respectfully ask you to pose to your colleagues on your committee and maybe to the greater body of AOC, because we share the same constituents, whether it's at the county level or at the state level. Mm-hmm. But my question to you would be, given the testimony that we heard yesterday that $1 million extended outreach yielded $5.5 million in benefits back to veterans, mm-hmm. what would be your reaction to consolidating some of the programs inside the agency that give de minimis one-time grants, emergency grants, and repurposing that money for greater outreach? Where do you think the bigger bang for the buck is?
Co-Chair Johnson, you're asking to use those outreach. I'm trying to understand the question.
No. I asked it very inartfully.
No,
if there
did
was
not.
More money in outreach,
yes,
versus one-time, very small grants that responded to an individual veteran, perhaps in crisis, but these are grants in the $50, $100. Range, maybe a little bit more from time to time.
Right.
Would you and your colleagues at the AOC Veterans Committee see greater efficacy in expanded outreach or in maintaining that pool of smaller money for one time?
Well, thank you for the question. I can't speak totally for my committee because I haven't taken this back, but I understand, I think, what you're asking, and certainly more outreach dollars, I think, could help with the, the efficiencies of reaching more of our veterans and helping more of our veterans. But I would have to go back to my committee and ask that question.
Would you mind doing so?
No,
and
I would, at least
exploring the concept?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
We meet next Monday, so I will ask them at that
Thank
meeting.
You.
Yes.
Senator Hansel.
Well, it's good to see you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
I just wanted to also mention that not only is she active in Veterans Affairs here on the state, but she also is with the National Association of Counties and is one of the leaders nationally on counties with veterans services issues, and appreciate your service. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative.
This is probably more for the state, but I was wondering, do you have offices set up like on the bases that we have in the state? I know that you do in county offices like in Klamath Falls, but I was wondering what you have on the actual bases, the National Guard bases. And
so, co-chairs, Representative Whitsitt, members of the committee, a strong partnership, both the Oregon Department.
Mr. Smith, I'm just going to have you reintroduce yourself.
Sorry, for the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And we have a strong partnership with the Oregon National Guard. So often those facilities are going to be guard facilities. And over specifically the last 10 years plus of war, often beyond the federal funds that have flowed down to deploy these citizen soldiers overseas on federal missions to Iraq, Afghanistan, and around the world, we've often seen federal resources for reintegration, family support, family readiness. So often they are not Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs staffed offices, but they will be Oregon Military Department and the Guard, and then really armory by armory and larger facility by larger facility. A strong link across our headquarters, both from ODVA to the military Department and the Adjutant General, and then at the local level, those county veteran service officers and the armory readiness officer or the family readiness support specialist from the Guards team.
Okay, if I could follow up.
Follow up, please.
So, like on your, is it called Leatherneck Club? The groups for the Marines and for, that are in each town that service primarily, I would say, or serve the Vietnam veterans now. Do you have people that actively go there and talk to these people? I mean, it's a big thing in Klamath Falls. You can go about every other block, and there's a group that meets. They're open every day, and I was just wondering, for your outreach, it seems like that would be a really great way to connect with some of these veterans, is through their clubs.
So co-chairs, Representative Whitsitt, separate and distinct from the Guards, Facilities, and ODVA, a strong network of what we call national service organizations. Everyone from the, I believe the Leatherneck is a Marine Corps League unit, and we're still hearing from our advisory committee that hosted its meeting there about the steak dinner the night before. but from the annual conventions, both in the summer and midwinters, at the statewide level, on down to those local posts, often those national service organizations are connecting with veterans and their families in a very different way than a government agency would. They are bird-dogging, finding veterans just like we are on outreach. There is a small slice of dollars that come through our budget to support the national service organizations. They often have their own power of attorney, separate and distinct from ours. So sometimes veterans choose to submit through their power of attorney through one of the service organizations. But it's a wide range. Vietnam Veterans of America, Iraq, Afghanistan Veterans of America, sometimes by era of service, branch of service, component of service, but a huge network of national service organizations.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions? Mr. Holton.
Thank you, Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee. My name is Dwight Holton, and it's my distinct honor to serve as the CEO of Lines for Life, where, among other things, we are home to a tremendous military helpline service that we provide in thanks to the investment from the state and a very close partnership with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, Multnomah County, and others, for that matter.
Excuse me, Mr. Holton, I'm going to have you just inch back just a little bit. These microphones are so sensitive, they start to reverberate.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. As I'm sure the members of the committee know, suicide persists as a terrible challenge and almost epidemic among veterans. Every 65 minutes, a veteran in the United States takes his or her own life. It's 22 a day. 150 veterans, just about on average, in Oregon every year. So every other day, a veteran takes his or her own life. Several years ago, the legislature, you invested in a military helpline distinct and apart from the VA's line so that it could exist as an anonymous out of the chain of command line for those who did not want to seek help through that the VA line at Lines for Life. And I'm here to report that thanks to your investment, we are reaching more people than ever before. We had a military helpline before your investment. What we've been able to do for the first time ever is direct and substantial outreach and promotion around that line. So if you look at the years before we had your investment and help, we were reaching 800 to 900 veterans and their families annually. We're now on pace in our first year with this contract with the ODVA to reach over 1,500 veterans and their family. Put another way, we're reaching nearly 68% more people than we were reaching before your help. Our success in reaching folks is due in part to a comprehensive and remarkable boots-on-the-ground outreach effort. Representative Whitsitt mentioned the Leatherneck Clubs and other. We divided the state, our military helpline divided the state into six regions and planned campaigns throughout those regions to begin this summer and continue into the fall that resemble military campaigns. Anywhere you can find veterans, we were, or we have been and we are, whether it's libraries or VFW halls or American Legion posts or bases, sheriff's offices. We're there looking to connect people and promote the military helpline and ensure that it's reaching people who have a need.
Mr. Chair?
Please.
I'm having a hard time following you, Mr. Holton. Does this mean that you have, like, brochures or signs or warm bodies or... You're covering a lot of territory, and I was just kind of ticking off. If you had people in each one of those places, that's pretty expensive.
We've sent people out with those materials. They're based with us in Portland. They're people who work on the crisis lines, but we've been sending them out to do promotional efforts to make sure that our posters, our signs, our pamphlets, our materials are out in the region, getting to people.
Follow?
Please.
So when you say you reach people, is that what the reach means?
Yes.
And this is a creepy question to ask, and I apologize for it in advance, but it's not exactly like you're tracking how well your material is. If someone is calling you, they're in extremis, and I presume you're dealing with their immediate problem. You're not asking where they got your number.
That's true. So we don't do that kind of data, although we learn a lot about the people who call us. But we can track it in the sense that we see the graph. We see the graph of contacts to us climbing as we have more people out. A second and a really important component of our outreach is our public-private partnership with both broadcasters and business community. So, for example, we're able, because we're a private organization, because we have such long-standing relationships both with the business community and broadcasters, to get a remarkable return on investment for advertising dollars that we do spend. We ran over 5,000 advertisements on the radio stations where you, AM and FM, where you would most likely find vets this summer, and we paid for 1/75 of that. Put another way, we got a 75-to-1 return on investment for every ad we bought. We also have tremendous partnerships with organizations like Les Schwab, which advertises and promotes the military line in every one of their locations throughout Oregon.
One other piece I'm curious about is, because Lines for Life handles other people in extremis, how do you sort? If I call you and I'm not a veteran, and I get to the veteran rep, or I mean, are there different numbers, or how do you segregate folks so they're getting lined up, in particularly in the case of a veteran, with peer-to-peer conversation?
It's a great question, and the answer is that for the most part we have separate numbers. We do have separate numbers. When I say for the most part, not everyone comes in through the military line, even though they're a member of the military or a family member. When they come in through the National Suicide Prevention Line, as most of you know, we're the National Suicide Prevention Line affiliate. So if you dial 1-800-273-TALK or 1-800-SUICIDE from any phone with an Oregon area code, you get us. And if a veteran or family member comes in through the other line, we'll triage that to someone. We're sitting in a room about this big, our call counselors are, and they work as a team. We find it best to be peer-to-peer. It's a buddy system model that we try and mimic. So we try and make sure that people who have military backgrounds, who will benefit most from a counselor with military history, gets to somebody with military history and military familiarity themselves.
Thank you.
These partnerships that we've been able to build with the community, with the business community, and with the broadcasting community have really grown the line tremendously. It's been very helpful. We have two other projects I want to update you on. One, I'm pleased to announce that we were recently asked by the VA to join in a project called Home Base, which is a demonstration project. There's several around the country looking at intensive efforts to reach rural veterans. The two counties selected by the VA, actually it's five counties in Oregon and Washington, two in Oregon, Senator Hansel, Representative Gomberg, and Senator Johnson, you'll be pleased to know that it's Tillamook and Umatilla counties are the two counties selected in Oregon for this intensive outreach program. Lines for Life will be providing the crisis intervention services as part of that outreach effort. We're really pleased with that. One other project, the Veterans Crisis Line. As many as you know, we are one of now four regional centers that take backup calls from the VA's crisis line. It used to be six. It's grown now to, it's shrunk now to only four centers nationally that do this. What that's meant is we've already seen a dramatic increase in our volume. Even when we were six centers, back in July of this year, we went from averaging 200 calls a week from the national VA line to close to 500. It settled back down in the 350 to 450 range throughout the fall. In January, we learned that they're going to shrink to just four centers, so our volume will probably grow to 500 to 800 calls a week from military families. What this means is we are really becoming national experts on ability and capacity to work with veterans in crisis, connect them with services, help them find that way forward. We are very anxious to continue this work, and we have been working closely with the Department of Veterans Affairs, with Director Smith and his team, on how we can expand that role, how we can do better. For example, we were meeting with the contract manager from ODVA just a couple of weeks ago, looking at how we can make sure that when we hear from Oregon vets, one of our questions is, Are you signed up? Are you receiving benefits? If not, how do we make a warm handoff to the ODVA to get you connected up and get you receiving the services, help, and support that you are entitled to, which you have earned? We are also looking at how we can serve the Department of Veterans Affairs in other ways. I want to point out that our contract with ODVA extends through March of next year. There's a renewal clause. We are not currently in the governor's budget for a renewal. We are hoping to restore that, and we are working with Director Smith on that. I think Director Smith will tell you, I don't want to speak for him, that he also sees tremendous value in the program and supports continuing it, but thinks maybe it should be housed in a more sensible place or a different place. But we are connected at the hip, I'll say, in figuring out how we go forward, and we'll be looking for support from members of the committee in ensuring that we get that contract restored. It's a fairly small amount of money. It's $350,000 over a biennium. We think we're reaching a tremendous number of people with it and want to continue that work.
Any questions? Well, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. These are the two people I have signed up. Is there anybody else that wanted to testify today?
Mr. Chair, I didn't want to testify. I was wondering if there were other people coming up. I just wanted to thank Mr. Holton for coming. I'm sorry I came in late. I was testifying in another hearing. I had the chance to visit Lions for Life in the recent few months, and I was really impressed with what they did. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Representative Reed, thank you very much. And I should have begun with an invitation. Many of you have been to see us. It's really cool. The two programs, the military line and the youth line, both of which are built on peer-to-peer models, are really remarkable. And watching people be reached the way they are, with our volume, what it has been, we've been doing as many as two rescues a night across the board on the lines. And those folks are back there saving lives every night. It's really remarkable, and it's an honor to be a part of that team.
Very impressive.
Senator Johnson.
How do you track that, Mr. Holton, when you say that there are two rescues a night? Are people speaking to you anonymously, or can you go back and check their...
So when we say rescue, that's kind of the most extreme circumstance when we end up having to call emergency services. So on somewhere between 93% and 98% of our calls, we don't end up having to call emergency services. And there are some folks, some crisis line models, where if someone calls and has a gun or a weapon, they immediately refer the call to 911. We don't do that. We try the least intervention possible, and often that means that we can de-escalate a call without having to call emergency services and develop a safety plan with the person. It usually involves a follow-up call, sometimes in an hour, sometimes the next day, sometimes after a few hours. All of it's collected in an emergency, in an electronic health record. Even if it's anonymous, it's associated with the phone number that called in. But when you ask how we track the two rescues, that means two times we had to call 911.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Any further questions? Well, again, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, and I'll ask once again if there's anybody else who wants to testify. Anything else before I close the public testimony and the hearing on 5539? I'll go ahead and close that public hearing then. And colleagues, we're going to give Ms. Dyster a break for the rest of the week. And Mr. Burke is going to come in. We're going to be talking about the PUC for the next 2 days. Anything you wanted to share with us before we adjourn?
Well, you won't have a chance to miss me too much because I'm with you all next week.
All next week. And we have fully unemployment. Colleagues, we are about halfway through phase one at this point, so I think that's positive news. Also say, Senator Monroe, we're glad to have you back with us. I hope you're feeling better.
Feeling some better.
All right. Anything else before we adjourn? All right. Thank you all. All right. Thank you all. We adjourn.